I'm Peter, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 20 years ago, yesterday. September 28, 2005, and I cannot believe that I'm saying that 20 years. It just kind of freaks me out. I think you're called an old-timer at that point. My first sponsor said to me, he was like, "What's up, man?" I was like, "Today is day 90." And he was like, "Oh, congratulations." He goes, "You know what tomorrow is?" I said, "What?" He goes, "91. So that moment smacked me in the face, and I carry that with me today. While I've amassed that amount of time, there is very little ego attached to it, because I know that there's not a date that I've heard of how long someone's been sober that I haven't heard someone go out or take their own life or something terrible happen to them that's self-inflicted because they didn't continue to utilize this program. I'm going to start the story with born in Alabama. I moved 20 times before I got out of high school. My parents split up when I was 3 years old, so mom is currently on number 4, dad is on number 3. I was not a military brat, it was just a lot of moving around. My sister and I stayed with my mom, and she made a lot of very poor choices, and the very first poor choice of husband was absolutely the worst. I went to 3 different first grades. Going away from him, there was a lot of, not to get into that part too much, if there is an abuse that a child can go through, had that happened to me. My childhood was absolutely insane. With all the moving, there was zero stability. There was a lot of violence and neglect. My sister was not a nice person. Like, she stabbed me with a hunting arrow and shoved horse shit in my mouth. I had this very insane childhood. They're moving around through Georgia, Florida, Alabama, South Carolina. Step siblings came in my life and some out. There was some poverty in there. There was a trailer we lived in at one time that there was a hole by the sink, so I had to spread my legs so I could lean forward to brush my teeth, scenarios like that. So I have this upbringing, and life is progressing. I had my first drunk at 7. This wasn't anything by my doing. My mom was throwing a party at her house for a lot of coworkers, and each individually thought it would be cool to have a 7-year-old take a sip of their drink. And as a parent right now, I just cringe saying that out loud, thinking that's okay. Each individual was doing this to me. I got drunk because so many people gave me sips of their drinks. And I remember throwing up, and my grandfather was there, and he was walking me up the hill to the back of the house. And I was drunk at 7. The drinking did not continue from there. I know I hear a lot of people tell their story and share that first sip, the world opened up to them. That was not my experience. I did not have that immediate feeling when it came to alcohol. I went to some parties at 13 and would get drunk at those, but it was very random. Drinking was not really a big part of my adolescence. I did drink here and there, but it wasn't. For a kid as neglected and just free range as I was, I'd say I drank very little compared to what it could have been. When I was 16, I met a gentleman, a friend of mine at the time, and he introduced me to a Navy recruiter. I went into the recruiter, and the guy showed me this video of the Navy SEALs and SEAL training. And something clicked in me, and I was like, that's what I want to do. This is what I want. At the time, oceanography was appealing to me, but I swiped that to the side, and I was like, I want to be a SEAL. So from there on, my focus was to go into the Navy. So when friends offered me marijuana, drugs, whatever, I would say no, because I knew I was going to be questioned about that or tested in the military, and I didn't want to have to lie. This was in North Georgia. Sorry, it's confusing because I don't remember where I lived necessarily at most of these times, because there was just so much movement. But in North Georgia, this happened, and then after my sophomore year of high school, then we moved to Charleston, South Carolina for my junior year of high school. So junior year, and what's cool is a Navy town, so I hooked up with some guys whose parents were in the Navy, so I would get to go in early with them to the Charleston Navy base and swim before school. and then go through high school and then work afterwards. And I wrestled. I did good in school. I was a pretty decent kid, and this was my focus. My senior year of high school, my third dad and mom said they were moving, and we had made a deal that I could stay my junior and senior year at the same school. They said, "We're moving to Greenville," and I said, "No, you're moving to Greenville. I'm staying here." I finished off my senior year. I had a roommate. I was emancipated. I was emancipated in my senior year of high school, had a job, and was finishing off high school and exercising and preparing myself to go to the military. I had my own apartment my senior year of high school, so you can just imagine the fun. And Charleston, South Carolina, yes, it was fun. Yes, it was great. All the things that you're thinking of in your head, yeah, absolutely. All that. Just no drugs, but all the other stuff. It was cool. It was a great time in my life. I knew what I was going to do. So graduate high school, August, go to Navy boot camp, everything's cool. Go to my technical school in Virginia Beach, everything's good. I get orders out to SEAL training out in Coronado, California. I move out there, and I'm going through SEAL training, and I'm doing it. I'm out there, I'm carrying the boats, carrying the logs, getting wet and sandy, all the stuff you get to see on YouTube now. I didn't get any of that before. I didn't know what I was getting into, but about 2 months into that, my knee started to bother me. I'll say that lightly. My knee really, really started to hurt. And at the time, going to medical was the kiss of death for being in SEAL training. Guys were quitting, but going to medical was just like, in everybody's mindset, was just the same as quitting. So I neglected to go to medical, and for the next month after that, I just wore through my knee. And what I was doing at the time was burning through all of the cartilage in my knees. 3 months in, I tripped on a rock on the beach and busted my knee, and they took me to the hospital to x-ray me because I was just lying there in pain, because not only does smacking your knee on a rock hurt, but my knee and the situation it was horrific pain. They cut open my pants and saw my knee the way it looked. And I remember the guy was like, "Oh my God." I mean, it was a balloon, and it wasn't because the smack on the rock. It was nasty. I got a medical discharge from the military at 20. I was in for 18 months. At 20 years old, I have honorable medical discharge from the Navy. And my whole world, I had these blinders on. You know, my paternal grandparents, really, really solid people. And I remember going to my grandfather and having a conversation with him. He served in World War II, and he fought in World War II. He was like, "Peter, why don't you go to college and join the military afterwards?" And I was like, "No, I am doing this. I'm making this decision. This is what I'm doing." Trying to guide me appropriately, but I didn't have anybody else in my life doing that for me. But I just remember hearing those words, and now I'm sitting here. My mom and stepdad had said, "Come home and we'll get you in college and you can sort of just start from there." And I was like, "Oh my God, thank you." So I fly from San Diego back to Atlanta with 2 C bags, my entire life in the 2 C bags. I get home. "All right, how do I go about the college thing?" And they're like, "You know, remember when we said we were going to help you with college?" I was like, "Yeah." They're like, "We're not going to do that." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I got a job as an electrician. I literally am this just completely lost. I mean, I didn't even take the SATs in high school. Like, I was not planning on anything but military. And I am home, and I'm working as an electrician. Some guys offered me pot. I'm like, yes. That no I was saying before changed. It just completely switched. So I'm smoking pot now. I'm certainly drinking, nothing heavily. I meet a dude, another guy from as an electrician. We go on this job where we were, you know, like a travel job where we were gone for like 5 days straight. And one day we're like in the bath, you know, going to the bathroom. He's like, "Hey man, you want to try this?" And it was cocaine. And I was like, "Yes, I do want to try cocaine. I don't know what this is supposed to do, but I tried it." And I was like, "I like that." So now we go from that whole, I have this mindset and this focus to none, like that's just completely gone. I am working as an electrician. I get into a relationship with a girl, and it is not a great relationship, but she at least gets me to go to college. So I'm going to school a little bit, working as an electrician, living with a bunch of roommates in a nasty house in Atlanta, and we moved down to Florida so she can go to her school and I can go to the one that allowed me in. And I'm just going to school, just kind of lost. And a buddy of mine from SEAL training, who also got injured, gives me a call, and he's like, Peter, how are you? And I'm like, all right, man. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm going to school, and like for ecology or, you know, zoology or something. And he goes, my parents helped me buy a bar in Manhattan, and I need someone I can trust to help me run it. Would you want to move up to New York City and do that? And I was like, yeah, I do want to do that. I don't want to go to college. I want to go to Manhattan and work at a bar. My girlfriend and I, we moved up to New York City, and I'm 22 at the time, and the relationship with the girl did not last. That blew up spectacularly, as they do. So I am now in the bar business and learning the bar business and working 100-hour weeks, and I'm putting all of my effort and time and energy into this. And he's teaching me management. He opens up another place, like a restaurant, so I've now get a little food in the background, and I'm working with him, and I'll shut the place down. I taught myself to bartend by going through the Mr. Boston's book and make myself a drink. And I would make myself a drink and drink it, and then another one and drink it. And I went through the whole damned book that way. And so that's how I taught myself to bartend. And it worked. That was good. I'm working with this guy, and I'm opening up clubs and just working nonstop. You know, I've met a few people in the city. A couple people offer me drugs. My no switch is completely off. It is yes to absolutely everything. The pills, the things under the tongue, whatever someone had and they offered it to me, sure. Yeah, I'll give it a shot. I didn't have this focus yet of, like, you know, drug of choice, as we say, or alcoholism or whatever. I just was drinking a lot and doing whatever drugs were around me. The relationship with this gentleman, with my friend, deteriorated. The people that I had met, and I'd started to get this friend network around me of people who grew up in New York City. I get offered a job to open up a very large bar and grill in Midtown Manhattan. This is a very large project, multi-million dollar, big deal thing. I take this job, and I'm 25 years old. I'm being recorded, so I'm going to be as coy as possible, but I think you're going to understand what I'm saying. It was an ethnic group of people that did things together. I was recognizing that these were the people who owned the place that I was working at and running. They asked me to participate in a few things, and I said yes, and I did them. And I did them really well, and they appreciated that. I was very good at what I was doing. And so I am now mixed up with criminal activity, we'll just say that. And I'm running this large place, participating in this criminal activity, and any sort of moral scope that I had, blinders or anything in my life, were just gone. I was just operating on my willpower, however I wanted to go, whichever direction I wanted to go in. I started to really do well financially. And with that came the point where I was like, instead of people saying, would you like to try, I was then purchasing for myself. I hear a lot of people say, oh, I would have done so much more if I had unlimited funds. Well, I had unlimited funds, and I utilized them to their fullest capacity, and it was not good at all. I went downhill really, really fast. There was a series of years there where I was sort of, I don't want to call it in control, because it's like, yeah, I handled my cocaine. That's just not a thing. I started to drink and use on a daily basis. The drinking was daily. The drugs were daily. And I was continuing to run this establishment. So I was doing the criminal activity and running this large bar and grill in Manhattan. And I was very good at running the large bar and grill. I had hired a really great staff. I did a great job with them. And I was making a name for myself in the city in this industry. Because of what I had done with the restaurant, all a while I am just staying up 2-3 days straight, getting just destroyed. I am living it up. I am living the life. I'm going out to clubs till all hours in the morning, coming outside of these famous dance clubs. It's bright out, and I'm standing there hailing a cab, and I realize I don't have a shirt on. And people are like, look, and I'm like, what are you looking at? And then I'm like, oh, I don't have a shirt on. I wonder where that went. Just a complete mess. Then it did that progression of I used drugs and alcohol to have a good time. Then I needed drugs and alcohol to have a good time. And then I just needed drugs and alcohol all of the time. It just went through that progression really quickly. And 9/11 happened. I had a lot of friends that were cops and firemen. I lost 4 friends that day, living in Manhattan, very traumatic day for me and for a lot of people. That was horrible. And then a very close friend of mine who is a fireman had survivor's guilt and ended up taking his own life because he couldn't handle the fact that he wasn't on call that day and wasn't in the towers. That fucked me up. And I was going to funerals and wakes and masses just for months after that. And I just leaned hard into the drugs, and I leaned hard into the alcohol. And it went from being a morning would be like smoking pot and then work through the day and then wait till later on in the evening before I really turned it on. Well, that changed after 9/11. It was full tilt. I didn't have any throttle. There weren't any things that were keeping me from not drinking and using. I was just completely down the rabbit hole. At that time, I'd crossed the line from heavy drinker user to addict alcoholic. At this point, I am still doing all the things and running the place and, you know, still financially very viable. I'm buying lots of things, using money to cover up how horrible I feel. I ended up buying a penthouse in the Upper East Side. Think about this kid with the story with the trailer park and the hole opening my leg so I don't fall in a hole while brushing my teeth. And now I'm in a penthouse in the Upper East Side, and not a damn person helped me get here. This was me on my own 2 feet with no help from a soul. And I'm holding that like, look at me. Look what I've become. You know, and the facade, I was showing all the facade. I had the fancy clothes. I had the fancy address. I would literally go shopping down Madison Avenue and get the fancy bags and walk home. And because I had the penthouse, or I was on the penthouse level, literally hope that someone was in the elevator with me so they could see me press the floor above theirs, and I had the fancy bags. And this sounds so cheesy saying it out loud, but I'm serious. And when no one would get in the elevator with me, I literally would be like, this is the type of person I was. And it was not pretty. It's not a good person. I didn't treat people well. I had those 3 divisions. I had my criminal people, my drug and alcohol people, and then the people who witnessed the facade. Whether they believed it or not, I have no idea, but this was the trio of the type of person I was. And I remember I got scared. There was a day where I woke up and I was like, oh, I don't want to do this. I feel like shit. I don't want to do this. And minutes later, I'm doing it. And I'm like, uh-oh. Okay. I called up my stepmom. And I'm like, hey, so she ran a large business, and she told me about parties that they had where they had like an Easter egg hunt, and in the Easter eggs was drugs. Like, that was like, that was kind of that Easter egg hunt. She had told me that, and I remembered it, so I was like, maybe she knows somebody who has gotten sober or cleaned up before. So I called her up, and I'm like, I can't stop doing drugs. It's freaking me out. I don't know what to do. And she's like, Peter, I don't know what to tell you. And I'm like, okay, all right, bye. And it's like literally kind of went like that. That evening, I'm on a tear. That evening, two evenings, whatever. You know how it goes. I'm kind of panicking on what to do now. This was pre-Google. This was Yahoo, the Yahoo search. I opened up my computer and I Yahoo searched, how do you stop using drugs? Like literally, that's the best I could come up with. A pretty picture of this spa-like resort pops up on a lake. It was a Frank Lloyd Wright designed building. It was gorgeous. And I'm like, this looks like this kind of place that can help me out. So it was in Oklahoma. I'm living in Manhattan. I called them up. They're like, yeah, fly down to Oklahoma City. We'll tell us the flight. We'll pick you up and take you to our spot. And I'm like, okay. So I literally, like, hang up. I book a flight from New York City to Oklahoma City, called work, and was a buddy of mine who was the manager under me. I'm like, you need to cover for me. I got to go fix some shit. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I don't know how long I'm going to be gone, but I have to go do this. So I fly to Oklahoma City. I get picked up. They take me to the spa ranch place, stick me in the basement for detox. I'm down there for like 4 or 5 days, and then they decide it's time for me to come up and see the rest of the facility. And I go around, and they're showing me around, and I see all of these giant posters of L. Ron Hubbard. I had checked myself into a Scientology rehab. Yeah, I realized the error that I had made and got myself out of there a couple more days after that. That place was effing crazy, okay? I don't want to disparage it too much because I did once. Somebody actually got sober at one of those facilities and came up to me afterwards and was like, listen, that helped me a lot and it saved my life. So I'm sure that it's helped people. It did not help me. So I get home, and I'm like, I'm now scared straight. Well, that didn't work, and I ended up, here's the landing path of me trying to get sober. I go to outpatient programs, IOPs, I'm seeing therapists, I'm doing all of these things to try and fix myself. None of it is working. I am that horrible guy in the IOP that's, like, going and meeting people and bringing drugs with me to go, like, hang out and stuff. Like, I was horrible. Then I go into another treatment center. It was 28 days, and they said I needed to stay an extra week to cook some more, so I get 35 days there. The last day, getting ready to leave, and I have to do drugs. And I ordered drugs, and I made a plan to relapse. I leave that the day after I get out of the second treatment center that I completed, I relapse immediately and decide to become a chef because that's what someone in that mindset does. So I go to culinary school, and I'm maintaining, and I'm still drinking very heavily and doing some light drugs, and it's just still hammering downhill. I moved from New York City, because that was my problem, to Atlanta, because y'all don't have drugs or alcohol here. About 6 months later, I'm trying to swallow a pistol. I'm done. I cannot do it anymore. Chose another treatment center, flew out to Arizona, to Tucson, and went to a place called Sierra Tucson. And it was exactly what I needed because it didn't just focus on my addiction. It focused on my traumas and the abuses that I had dealt with. And it was exactly what I needed at the right time. So I went through that whole program, and when I was flying over there, right before I got on the plane, I said to myself, Peter, you have to be honest, because I had never done that before. I'd never really been honest with anything or anyone. And I went out there, and I was honest about everything that I had done and everything I was going through, and it was super challenging. I was that weird guy in the corner huddled up with my knees to my chest, kind of staring at the floor, rocking back and forth because all of these memories had come back. It sucked. It was hard. It was very brutal facing all of that. So they suggested that I come out and do an IOP, and so I did another IOP and come to AA meetings. And the very first AA meeting I went to was at the Triangle Club, and they were suggested, go to a meeting, get a sponsor. So I literally showed up to the meeting, and it was the 4 o'clock, and there was maybe 6 people in it, and there was a guy sitting in front of me that raised his hand to sponsor people. So I chose him out of proximity. I didn't do some fancy, like, I'm going to follow this guy around or anything. It was just truly because he was right there. And asked him to be my sponsor. And you know what? He gave me suggestions, very, very simple suggestions. And because I had had my ass completely whipped, I took those very simple suggestions. I called him on a daily basis. Even though my problems were massive and huge and I'm unique, special flower, I took these very simple suggestions. I called him, and I got a home group, which was the Think It Through Sober group. It's the 130 here, still going on, strong from what I know. Attended meetings regularly. I did a 90-90. I did all the stuff that everybody talks about. And even though I'm so different and unique and have such a special story, I decided to just really encapsulate the program and really take it on. And he took me through the steps. He took me through the big book, word for word, page for page. We would go down to the basement and meet once a week and read for an hour. I'd read to him, and we would talk about the book, and I went through the steps with him. The fourth step he presented to me, and I was very excited to write a list of all the people I was pissed off at, because that was what it was in my head before I actually got it. So I was, like, stoked about the fourth step. And then he's like, okay. And he's showing me what to do, and he goes, all right, you know, write your resentment. And then at the end here, Peter, I want you to write your place in it. And I go, I'm sorry, Sandy, what? He goes, your place in the resentment. And at that moment, it just crashed down on me. It really did. And I went from being excited to just being twisted up. So from being handed the fourth step through, going through the fourth step, and the fifth step, all the way to halfway through the ninth step, I would go to meetings and just grip the table, because I was in early recovery was absolute hell for me. But I continued to do the work. I continued to take the suggestions and move forward, and things started to happen for me. The fifth step, listen, Navy SEAL training, working for gangsters. I've been in some freaking fights, y'all. It's been a nasty situation. I don't even want to bring up the sexual misconduct stuff. I thought I was a man, I was a dude, and I was badass. And I'm talking about, and I was like, I'm going to show my sponsor in the fifth step all this stuff. And as I was reading it, I realized how horrific of a person I was and all the terrible, terrible things I did. And it dropped me down. It really did. It showed me how bad it took all of that, what I thought I knew about myself, and just, it just showed me how to be a human in society. It really did. All of these byproducts I got from just staying sober one day at a time were massive. First year I was in a group therapy thing, outside issues, and I did one-on-one counseling for outside issues, and I came to AA for my sobriety. My first sober job, my decision was I was going to go clean kennels. I wanted something to really humble me. And my sponsor was like, and I told my sponsor, I was like, hey, I'm going to do this. And he was like, why don't you try and get something loosely associated with your career? And I was like, oh, okay. I was taking a suggestion. I got a job that I started at the very base level of this cooking school. I was selling, like, whisks and pots and pans and stuff. When I showed up, not high on cocaine and not drunk, I actually was a pretty good employee. And I ended up becoming the culinary school director in, like, a year. It was crazy, and it was a phenomenal job. I got really busy, and I learned where to force and make sure AA was my number one. Because I heard over and over, whatever you put in front of your sobriety, you're going to lose. So I kept the meetings going even though I was salaried and working my butt off, started dating. I got into a relationship and I broke it off and I didn't have to make an amends and I didn't have any resentments. Can you imagine that? I mean, incredible, like absolutely incredible. I ended up, and this is from the 3-year mark to 20-year, and I don't want to minimize the work that I continue to do. I did end up meeting a woman who's not in recovery and some mutual friends, and we got married. And I got married on September 27th, 2008. Day before my 3-year anniversary. And I didn't even realize that until like a month before. I was like, yeah, the sober birthday is the day after our anniversary. So I really can remember both of those dates very well. I'm married for 17 years. I have 3 children. My wife and I own a business together. I have this, if I really told you how great my life was, somebody may come up here and punch me in the face. And I would deserve it because it is greater than, my life is so much greater than I deserve. It is truly, truly magnificent. I am in an intimate, mutually respectful relationship with my wife. I will give you one horrid story about courting this woman. So we're engaged. Of course, by this time, I'd shared with her that I was in recovery. We met up and then had gone on 3 full dates. So this is the amount of time. They weren't like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday dates. It was like, we'd go on a date and a couple weeks later go on another date. So this period of time had elapsed and I'd shared with her that I was in recovery and she really took it well and was like, I understand. I was wondering why you weren't drinking. Thank you for sharing it with me. Just very appropriate adult behavior that I had not really seen before, but it was cool. So we're engaged and we're sitting there, you know, like a Saturday night and we're watching a movie and it's chill. And it's just, you know, we're just cuddled up and this guy in this movie goes and sleeps with a prostitute. And I'm like, oh, she's going to ask. Sure enough, she goes, Peter? And I'm like, yeah? Have you ever slept with a prostitute? And my body just twisted up. And every ounce of my being was like, lie. Do not tell this high school cheerleader Miss Goody Two-Shoes that you've slept with a hooker. And I said, yes, I have. And I was honest with her. And she learned, she didn't ask anything else. She learned two things. One, that if she asked me a question, I was going to be honest with her. And two, be careful what to ask me. I know she had follow-up questions, because she's an inquisitive woman. But she did not ask me any follow-up questions. Nor has she in the 17 years we've been married. I formed a relationship based off of honesty and mutual respect. I've never lied to her. I've never lied to my sponsor. I have fibbed stories to make them sound funnier. I am a very honest person now. I continue to utilize this program. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. I have a poop ton of sponsees. None of them are here because they've all heard my story a lot. I'm of service to my home group. My wife knows that my sobriety is number one in my life. And I hate saying that because I absolutely put her on the moon and I love my children's, but I know that if any of those go in front of my recovery, it's all gone. She's never once ever said like, you going to a meeting tonight? Anything like that. She's always supported me no matter what when it came to that. And I think that's amazing. This program has given me an existence that I had no idea. Like if you had told 27-year-old me that you would live in the burbs and have 3 kids and a house and own a business with your wife, I don't drive a minivan anymore, but I did have one. And I would probably punch that person in the face that told me that my life would look like this now. Got a great group of friends. I've got a great relationship with certain family members, not all of them. I absolutely adore my life. Thank you all for listening to First I slip, and then I quit. Rescue me. And
Well, I sold it then for me. Takes me where the promise is. All is. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow. We get this word. On a broad highway, God wants us. We walk eternally, look into love's window. For a heart it beats for me, takes me where the promise. Take me where the promise is.